Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is called Vayetze. It means, "And he went out." The Torah portion is from Genesis chapter 28, verse 10, to Genesis 32, verse 3. The Haftarah is Hosea chapter 12, verses 12 to 14, and Hosea chapter 13, verses 1 to 16, and Hosea 14, 1 through 10. The Brit Hadashah is John chapter 1, verses 19 to 51. Before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe. We thank you and praise you for making us a part of your people. And we thank you and praise you for giving us Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as our forefathers. Thank you for including us in their family and in your family and in your kingdom. Bless all your people on this Shabbat. In Yeshua's name, amen. We are given the history of our forefathers so that we will identify with them. We need an identity as a people that we could not have had without this history that we've been reading about in the book of Genesis. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob set the standard of proper Hebrew behavior. Yet we see their humanness sometimes in dealing with the problems in their lives. Now we're going to discover that the house of Jacob, in this Torah portion, is a family conceived in strife. Is it any wonder that 4,000 years later the strife continues? Jacob was not himself a man of strife. The strife was injected into his family by Laban's opportunistic meddling in Jacob's marriage plans and in exploiting of Jacob for his vast knowledge of increasing sheep and goat herds in order to increase Laban's wealth. Now Jacob was truly in a tough spot. His brother wanted to kill him. In fact, his brother was trying to kill him in the womb. And you know that Esau had tried to kill Jacob all of Jacob's life, probably very unfortunate playing instances. For example, maybe Jacob would fall and hit his head or break an arm or, you know, things like that. I'm sure that Esau was very unkind to Jacob. And so now he's in this tough spot because of the birthright and the firstborn blessing. Where was he to go? Well, he's in his uncle's house because that's where his mother told him to go. And he is in a spot where his uncle is now going to use Jacob to obtain wealth from which Jacob will be excluded. Jacob is going to be excluded from all of the wealth that this uncle is getting because of Jacob. Yet Jacob continues to act honorably. Leah and Rachel, which are assumed to be twins in rabbinic literature, and it is taught that they were to marry Esau and Jacob. Leah would have married Esau and Rachel would have married Jacob. Are being pitted against each other by their own father, Laban, because of how he treated them in this marriage deal. So what can they do in a situation like this? You can't help in a situation like this but feel jealousy toward the other. And both Leah and Rachel had a right to conceive children by Jacob. But what made this situation so much more untenable was the lopsided love, which Jacob truly cannot help that. Your heart loves who it loves. And a woman who he probably loved, I'm sure. He loved Leah. But he was in love with Rachel. But he loved Leah, I'm sure. But it's not the same. You know, when you... There's a difference between being in love with somebody and then having another person in your life that you truly love. Big difference. So he now has a duty toward both of these women, one that he truly is in love with, the other that he probably loves. And so now he's having to do this duty. And how he did this was to submit himself to both of his wives and their handmaids in an effort to keep them happy. You know, he's got this boss who is his uncle, part of his family who should be looking out for him, but this man is using him. And he's got these two women who keep fighting over him and his attention. And you can't blame them because they both have a right to him. And in the story about Reuben going out into the field and getting the mandrakes, and Rachel wants the mandrakes from Leah, and you know they, you know he come, Jacob comes in from tending the sheep, and he's, it's announced to him, you're going to go over here and sleep with this one tonight. This is, I mean, we can kind of see the humor in this, but I am sure that Jacob was not laughing at this situation. This was all because of Laban's greed, and because he wanted to get the best from Jacob and use it for his own building of wealth and his own household, and not including Jacob in it. Thus, Jacob's life becomes a picture of a life of strife from his own conception until his very death. He struggled more than either his father Isaac or his grandfather Abraham. Why was that? Why was life for Jacob so much more struggle than for Isaac or Abraham? Well, I believe it's because Jacob now is the one who will truly bring the seed of the promised son, Isaac, to fruition. It is through Jacob that the Lord will begin to establish his kingdom on the earth. So Jacob's account is one of strife, caused by the birthing of a kingdom. And it is, for us, Jacob's history, but it is our future. It is prophecy for us. Jacob's life was Jacob's life. For us, it was history, but it's also future prophecy. The birth of the Lord's kingdom on earth comes at a great price, and here we are at the end, when we should greatly identify with Jacob, because his life represents the trouble that I believe we're now beginning to see in the birthing of Yeshua's kingdom. Now, the two wives, Leah, represent the house of Judah, and Rachel, the house of Joseph, who strive with each other to this day, and whose children strive with each other to this day. And so far in this birthing of the kingdom, we have Jacob's trouble, including struggles with the other branch of the family, which later on I'm going to identify as Catholicism and the Protestants that come from Catholicism. And we have the struggle within his own household between the children of Leah and Rachel, the house of Judah and the house of Joseph. Let's go to Laban, because Laban represents those Hebrew family members that weigh on us, that take advantage of us and want nothing to do with our ways, which is the Torah's ways, you know. Laban was an idolater worshiping other gods. What group of the family, what family branch can you think of that are idolaters worshiping other gods? He did not worship Jacob's God. Laban wanted nothing to do with Jacob's God. He only wanted Jacob's talents and his blessings that Jacob received from the Lord. And Laban wanted these for himself because he would be able to prosper under that without having to make the commitment to uphold the laws of the kingdom himself. In Genesis chapter 30, verse 27, Laban says, "If I've found favor in your sight, please stay with me, because I've learned through divination, serving other gods, that the Lord has blessed me because of you." See, so Laban didn't have to have his own personal faith upholding the Torah. He didn't have to actually do the things that get you the blessings. I'm not talking about salvation here. We don't get salvation by keeping the Torah, but we do get blessings. And we do express our faith in the Lord by keeping the Torah. That's, you know, the Lord Yeshua said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." That's how people will know you love me, because you keep my commandments and not the commandments of these other gods over there. You keep mine. You see? And so Laban didn't want to have to keep the commandments of the Lord, but he just wanted to have the blessings. But Jacob, in spite of all that, remains faithful not only to Jehovah, but also to his family. And why did Jacob remain faithful to Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Jehovah? Well, one, Jacob was a man of the tents. It meant that he kept the Torah. That's what it means. He learned the Torah. And we understand from historical writings that Jacob probably learned the Torah from not only Abraham, but possibly Shem as well. And two, Jacob had to remain faithful to the Lord during his time with Laban in order to test the promise that the Lord gave him. And what promise was that? Well, it was the promise that the Lord gave Jacob after the dream. In Genesis 28:12, after he had the dream, it says, here about the dream, rather, he says, he saw a raised highway. And by the way, I'm reading from the International Standard Version. He saw a raised highway that had been built with its end pointing on earth and its beginning pointing in heaven. God's angels were ascending and descending on it. And there was the Lord standing above it and telling Jacob, "I am the Lord God of your grandfather Abraham. I'm Isaac's God too." Now, that would have been significant to Jacob because he's been studying about this God and talking to Abraham and to Isaac and learning. See, "I'm giving you and your descendants the ground on which you are sleeping." So here he is with his head on a stone pillow, and the Lord is standing above him telling him that the ground on which he's sleeping is going to be his. "Your descendants are going to become like the dust of the earth and spread out to the west, east, north, and south." Now, this is a promise that the Lord gave to Abraham, and he gave it to Isaac, but now he's giving more details because, you know, he didn't say to Abraham they're going to spread out to the west, east, north, and south. He just says your descendants are going to be like the sand of the sea, the dust of the earth, and so forth. And then he says, "All the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants." Well, that's what he said to Abraham, that all of the families of the earth will be blessed through you, Abraham. Verse 15, "Now pay attention. I'm here with you, and I'm going to be watching over you wherever you go." I'm going to bring you back to this land because I won't ever leave you until I've accomplished what I've promised about you. And so we need to see a little bit about this promise now, because this promise is unique as well to Jacob. The Lord didn't say this to Abraham or to Isaac, but now we're getting some more unfolding of understanding, and the Lord is telling Jacob, I'm going to give you details about what I'm going to do. And right here in verse 15 is the prophecy about how the children of Israel are going to be scattered and they're going to be brought back. But it's first going to happen with Jacob going to Laban. And then the next time it happens, it's going to be with the children of Israel going down to Egypt. Then the next time it happens, it's going to be with the house of Israel going to Assyria, and then the house of Judah going to Babylon. And then later it's going to happen with the house of Judah being scattered out of the Roman Empire and into exile. But here's the promise. I'm going to bring you back to this land because I won't ever leave you until I've accomplished what I've promised about you. Now, this does not only mean to Jacob himself personally, it means it to his descendants as well. Jacob's righteousness was imputed to him in the same way that it was to Abraham, because Jacob believed what the Lord told him. When we believe what the Lord has told to Abraham, like Jacob is going to believe what the Lord is telling him, which is the same thing that he told Abraham with a few more details, when we do that, the Lord imputes it to us as righteousness. And Jacob must have learned of the promises that the Lord made to Abraham and Isaac, right? But it would not have been until he actually had the birthright and the firstborn blessing in his possession that Jacob would understand that those promises pertained to him. And it would have been the Lord that would have made sure that Jacob knew that those promises pertained to him. So now, Jacob's job was simply to honor the Lord in everything he did, to express his belief in the Lord's promises. That's why Jacob remained faithful. It is also the reason why you and I, who are Jacob's descendants, must remain faithful to the covenant and to continue to believe the promises. You see? Jacob was so honorable that he stayed with Laban an extra 6 years after winning Rachel's hand, which meant that he served Laban for a total of 20 years. Now, there's some prophecies in these numbers here. The prophecy of the 7 years worked for Leah and the 7 years worked for Rachel have to do with the cycle of 7,000 years in which Yeshua will have struggled to bring his kingdom to fruition on the earth. 7,000 years will be served simultaneously by Yeshua, but they were served consecutively by Jacob. In other words, Jacob had to do it 7 and 7. But Yeshua gets to do it 7,000 served simultaneously. The six additional years that he worked for Laban points to the 6,000 years before the millennial 1,000-year reign, during which Yeshua will work to finish the final task of bringing the earth under his control so that he can then present the kingdom in good condition to his king and father, who is also our king. Yeshua is the vassal king to his father. His father is our father, but he is the vassal, and it's his duty to present this kingdom in good condition. So we have 6 additional years spent trying to bring this process to a fruition. And in the prophecy, that adds up to 20 years. The 20 years of servitude also represents 2,000 years of being in the grip of idol-worshipping Catholicism that subsumed the Torah and kept the blessings, just like Laban kept Jacob's blessings. Laban was a man who acted with all the trappings of external honor, but with none of the genuineness, sincerity, and compassion that should accompany that, which would be a true example of honor, honor that comes from the heart. Laban's honor was the cloak that he used to cover up his greed. Yet, this is the place where both Rebekah and the Lord wanted Jacob to be. Why? Well, because the Lord shows us how he is with us wherever we go in order for us to have confidence in him when it is time for our regathering back to the land. So we have to be where the Lord has put us so that he can show us that he is able to bring us back, you see? And so then after Jacob's dream, the Lord gives Jacob this promise in Genesis 28:15. And he says, "Behold, I am with you and will keep you in all places where you go and will bring you again to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken to you of." So this is a promise that we have to keep in mind, just like Jacob had to keep it in mind. It is not just about him, but it's also about us. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 30, and I'm reading from the King James now, when you are in tribulation, when is that going to be? Well, just about any time, but in our instance, it's at the end of days, because this is written after Jacob lived, obviously, and so it's not talking about Jacob's literal tribulation back there with Laban. It's talking about a future tribulation. When you are in tribulation and all these things come upon you in the latter days, see, we get this definition right here in the verse. If you turn to the Lord your God and shall be obedient to his voice, for the Lord your God is a merciful God, he will not forsake you or destroy you or forget the covenant of your fathers that he swore to them. So Moses is repeating the promise that the Lord gave to Jacob that he would not forsake him, no matter where he went. But in Hebrews, we're also going to get the same promise. So the Hebrews writer is going to say, "Let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have." For he said, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." See, again, as I've been trying to say, and this Hebrew writer in Hebrews 13:5 says it even better than I could, he says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, but be content with such things as you have." That is the life that Jacob was leading under Laban. He was content with what the Lord had given him. But when it was time for him to leave, what did Jacob do? He got up and he left. When it was time for Terah to leave Ur, what did he do? He got up and he left. He didn't make it all the way, but he got up and he left. When it was time for Abraham to leave Haran, what did he do? The Lord said, "Get up and leave." Abraham got up and left. When Jacob is told by the Lord to get up and leave, what did he do? He got up and left. When the Lord tells us it's time to leave, what are you going to do? You're going to get up and leave. And until that time, whether you're being used and abused and whatever is going on in your life, whether you're having strife and problems, you're going to continue to be content with such things as you have, because the Lord said, I will never leave you or forsake you, and you're in this position because this is where I want you to be for now until I tell you to leave. It is in Genesis 31:3 that the Lord ordered Jacob. You know, Jacob had to be ordered out of there. Jacob was waiting on the Lord contentedly. In Genesis 31:3 in the ISV, then the Lord ordered Jacob, go back to your father's territory and to your relatives. I will be with you. So Jacob just gets up, sends for Rachel and Leah to come out of the field where his flock was, and he says, you know, here's some problems that have been going on, and, you know, your father has cheated me, and he's broken our wage agreement, and he has taken those speckled and spotted sheep that I said would be my wages, and he's done all these things to me, so it's time to leave. The Lord said it's time to leave, and I'm going to go, and so you're coming with me. He didn't say it quite like that. So Rachel and Leah agreed with him. In verse 15, they said, or actually in verse 14, they said, we don't have anything left of our inheritance because our father has spent all of our inheritance. You know, Laban was this extravagant guy. Through this whole thing, all I can think of is the Vatican. You know, they take in all this money and, you know, get the blessings from the people believing in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the promises of being in the family of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And these people fill their coffers. And they're so rich. The Vatican is one of the richest nations in the world. And they don't really do that much for their own people. This is truly Laban thing going on here, you see? And so Leah and Rachel agree. So they all just get up and leave. They don't report to Laban. They don't need to. The Lord has given them instructions, and so they're doing what the Lord has told them. The promise to Jacob is that his seed will inherit the land, and that wherever he is and wherever we are, the Lord will keep us and bring us back to the land. And furthermore, we have the prophecy for our times in Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 7, that says the Lord is going to bring us back. He says, therefore the time is coming, declares the Lord, when people will no longer say, as surely as the Lord lives who brought up the Israelites from the land of Egypt, but they will say, as surely as the Lord lives who brought the descendants of the Israelites from the land of the north and from all the lands where I had driven them and brought them into the land, then they'll live in their own land. And you see, the Lord had told Jacob he was going to spread Jacob's descendants into the west, the east, the north, and the south. And here he's going to gather them from all those lands in the east, west, north, and south where he has driven them. And he's going to bring them back into their own land. And he's going to do it while he keeps his promise of never leaving us or forsaking us. So now, after Jacob's personal troubles, you know, his own personal great tribulation, he still trusts the Lord. And he gets the family, that he raised and gathers them back to the land of his forefathers, which is also their inheritance. Now, this is not going to be a journey without peril. I was talking with Laura, and she pointed out that the threats Laban made to Jacob when he left, and that also the book of Jasher talks about, after Jacob made a covenant with each other in chapter 31, that Laban sent his men to Esau. Now, in our day, that would be the same as the Catholic Church and those Protestant Catholics going ahead and just working with those ISIS people, you know, to prevent our entry into the land. In fact, among the house of Judah, there are those Jews, those ultra-Orthodox Jews, who try to prevent, you know, entry back into the land. In fact, the house of Judah tries to prevent everyone else but the Jews from coming back into the land. I believe, I'm going to go down a little rabbi trail here, I believe that the reason that the Lord allowed Greater Israel to be divided up into so many other nations, where, you know, there's this little sliver called Israel, and then behind that, to the east, is there is Jordan, and to the north is Lebanon and Syria, and to the south is part of Egypt, and we have part of Saudi Arabia is also, you know, in there, and then there's to the way north is Iraq and Iran and that whole area, the greater Israel. But why is the UN boundary of Israel, why is it just this little tiny sliver? Well, I believe it's because the Lord is smarter than we are, according to Brad Scott, and I believe Brad Scott, the Lord is smarter than we are, and he could foresee that somebody would catch on to this thing of, hey, I can actually move to Greater Israel. And if I move to Greater Israel, it's the same thing as me making Aliyah. Wow. I don't need Brother Judah's help or his advice or his permission. I can go where the Lord has said to go. So in our day, the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church will start to work against our entry back into the land, just as Laban did after he made a covenant with Jacob in Genesis chapter 31, and then the book of Jasher telling us that right immediately afterward, Laban sent men to go talk with Esau and say, hey, you know, your brother's coming. So we can expect that again. Now let's go to Genesis 31:26 and see exactly what it was that happened between Laban and Jacob. Then Laban asked Jacob, what did you do? You deceived me, carried off my daughters like you would war captives. Wow! Now that is some kind of accusation. See, this just carries on the false accusation that Jacob is a deceiver. There was no deception. It wasn't like, you know, Jacob was just trying to sneak off for any other reason than that the Lord told him to. I guess he would probably not want to make a big deal out of it, because he had, after all, been taken advantage of so long by Laban that, you know, I would do the same thing. I'd get fed up and I would just kind of thumb my nose and get in my car and leave. If the Lord told me, I wouldn't tell anybody. I have authority now. I have a mandate by the Lord. I'm going. Probably also, though, you have to remember Jacob might have had in his head that, even though Laban later on says, if I had known you were going to go, in verse 27, I would have thrown you a party and there would have been singing and a band playing. Yeah. No, no, no. He probably would have tried to imprison Jacob, or he would have gotten some of the grandchildren in his house and tried to keep them, or he would have done something to keep Jacob there. Jacob wasn't going to put up with this. I really don't believe that Jacob was skulking off. I think he was walking out proudly, like they did at the Exodus, and like they will at the second Exodus, you see. And in verse 28, it says, "As it is, you didn't even allow me to kiss my grandchildren and daughters goodbye. You've acted foolishly." Oh, really? Well, from what I can see in the scriptures here, he didn't really give much of a hoot about his grandchildren and his daughters. He acted on his son's behalf more than he did for his grandsons, you see. Verse 29, and here's where we get the threat. Laura was, and I were talking about this, and she brought this up about the threat, and she's actually right about it. He says, "It's actually in my power to do some serious evil to you." So there you have it. That's probably why Jacob left in secret, not to deceive him and not to skulk away like he was doing something wrong, but to leave boldly because he knew Laban had power to do some serious evil to him. But guess what? The Lord is always faithful. And Laban said, "Last night the God of your father told me, 'Be careful what you say to Jacob, whether good or evil.'" And so Laban gets a warning to not be careful, to be careful what he says to Jacob, but in that is a veiled threat from the Lord that don't do it. I mean, you got to be careful what you say, let alone what you do, you see? So the false accusations and the threats, again, come from Laban. Can we expect to have these threats and accusations, false accusations against us? You bet. They're already happening in Israel. Israel is being falsely accused right now as we speak. They are being accused of being the people who have started all of this ISIS mess, and they're being accused of being not only the reason for the Paris attack last week, but the cause of it. So now, not only is Jacob getting it from his own family, which is another branch of the family, but nonetheless his own family, he's also going to get it from Esau. In Genesis 32, verses 1 to 3, it says, "As Jacob went on his way, angels from God met him. As he was watching them, Jacob said, 'This must be God's camp.' So he named the place Mahanaim. Then Jacob sent messengers ahead of him into the land of Seir, that is, into the territory of Edom, to meet his brother Esau." So you see, Laban didn't have to do that. Laban didn't have to go over to Esau and say, "You know, he skulked away, he secretly left, he stole my daughters and my grandchildren." He didn't have to go do that. That was accusations. You know, Laban agreeing with Esau that Jacob is a deceiver. Let us not do that, okay? Let us not, do the agreement with Esau and Laban that Jacob is a deceiver and that he's secretive and skulking away and stealing stuff from Laban, okay? The ingathering is going to be a dangerous time, but the Lord Jehovah will do for Jacob's family this time what he did in Jacob's time, which is he's going to send protectors or messengers, angels, you know, those 144,000. He's going to send those guys ahead of us, and they're going to come to meet with us just as they met with Jacob. I believe we are coming closer to the time when we're going to have to meet this challenge from Esau. We will be challenged by Laban and by Esau about our claim to Israel very soon. But know this, the Lord will not leave us or forsake us. Continue honoring Him and obeying Him and believing in His promises. These will bring us home. Shabbat Shalom.